The first time it happened, I was in a forest in the north of France. I must have been 25 or 26. I had just been hired to teach high school philosophy in a town at the edge of the canal, up in the fields near the Belgian border. That particular evening, some friends and I had gone out for a walk in the forest. Night had fallen. We were walking. Gradually, our laughter faded, and the conversation died down. Nothing remained but our friendship, our mutual trust, and shared presence, the mildness of the night air, and everything around us. My mind emptied of thought. I was simply registering the world around me, the darkness of the underbrush, the incredible luminosity of the sky, the faint sounds of the forest, branches snapping, an occasional animal call, our own muffled steps only making the silence more palpable. And then, all of a sudden, what? Nothing. Everything. No words, no meanings, no questions, only a surprise, only this. A seemingly infinite happiness, a seemingly eternal sense of peace. Above me, the starry sky was immense, luminous, unfathomable. And within me, there was nothing but the sky, of which I was a part, and the silence, and the light like a warm hum, and a sense of joy with neither subject nor object. No object other than everything, no subject other than itself. Yes, in the darkness of that night, I contained only the dazzling presence of the all. Peace, infinite peace, simplicity, serenity, delight. This is what Spinoza meant by eternity, I said to myself, and naturally that put an end to it, or I was expelled. Words returned, and thought, and the ego, and separation. But it didn't matter. The universe was still there, and I was there with it, or within it. So writes André Comte Smallville in his book, The Little Book of Atheist Spirituality. When I say that spirituality is back on the table in Unitarian congregations after an absence of almost half a century, people sometimes say, okay, but what the heck is spirituality? And indeed, there are a lot of ways to use that word. And there are also a lot of definitions of love, different types of love, with everyone having their own experience of love and definition that works for them. But I understand what's being asked. People want to know, how can we meet this need if we don't really know what it is? Perhaps the easiest place to start is to say what it isn't. When I was on the board of the Unitarian Church of Vancouver, there was an upsurge at that time in the number of neo-pagans attending the congregation. There was just a really active pagan group, and so people started to join the church. And some of the members of the congregation became anxious. They wanted to know, like, what do these people believe? What are they doing on Thursday nights? What do they have in common with us? When someone raised that concern with a group of people that I was standing with, saying, what do they have in common with us? I answered, well, I think you mean, what do they have in common with you? I go to those pagan meetings, so I guess I'm not a part of your us. And that often led to a surprised look, I think, because most people at the time thought of neo-pagans as young women wearing black clothing and a lot of jewelry. And I dressed even more conservatively then than I do now. You go to the pagan group? Was the most common response. So after this moment of being startled, I smiled and I went on to describe my experience of neo-paganism, both within the Unitarian congregation and more broadly. And I explained that the only pagans who were showing up at Unitarian churches were really Unitarian-minded pagans, people who liked our principles and valued reason and paid attention to science and what science had to say. These people wanted to be part of a community that stands for those ideals. And we really didn't have to worry about the other non-Unitarian-minded pagans because, frankly, they're not actually interested in us. Similar questions have been asked at various times over the past 200 years, really. At one point, people were asking, well, what if we become known as an atheist church? Oh my goodness. And other times, people have asked, well, what if we become known as the gay church? Which is really all the same question. What if we become known as this one particular type of church? And looking back, it seems silly to worry about whether we're going to become an atheist church. That's a question that was a worry about 150 years ago. And now we're quite comfortable saying we're a welcoming congregation. We know it doesn't define us. It's just part of who we are. It's one piece in the mix. And really, take a look at the people around you in this room right now. What are the chances that you will become a one-issue group of people? I find that rather unlikely. I like to think of a congregation or a fellowship as a chalice. Each chalice, each congregation is unique. And within each congregation, with our own shape of chalice, we, all of us, are sitting around the rim. No one gets to be in the center. And as long as we do our work of holding the rim, and making sure that all the mix of people are represented, then we don't have to worry about people misunderstanding who we are. We are a mix, and we can name that mix. None of the people that I've talked to who are longing for more spirituality in services are interested in converting anyone else to their point of view. Our doors are not getting pushed down by a whole bunch of people who want us to repent or follow Jesus or submit to Allah or do anything else that we don't want to do. Not that I have anything against those folks. I count many of them as my friends. But they are following traditions that have some fundamentally different premises than our own. If you think that there is only one way to salvation, you're not going to be interested in our principles and sources, which make it pretty clear, first of all, that there's more than one way to salvation, and secondly, that not everyone is actually interested in salvation, and that's okay too. What we're talking about are people who agree with the practices of reason, freedom, and tolerance in matters of religion, people who value the findings of science, people who want to be part of a diverse and supportive community that celebrates life, seeks truth and meaning, practices compassion, and promotes justice. Does that sound familiar? So let's try again. When someone says, "What the heck is Unitarian spirituality?" I'm tempted to say, "Well, let's ask." Let's ask that particular person. And what I really mean by that is, let's ask them about their experiences. Alain de Botton begins his book, Religion for Atheists, by saying that beliefs are probably the least interesting aspects of religion. I tend to agree. While beliefs matter deeply to those of us who hold them, they don't make for great conversation. "I believe in God," says one person. "I don't believe in God," says another. There is nowhere for that conversation to go that isn't going to feel like those two people are trying to convert each other. It's not a dialogue. It's more like the WWF of Unitarian fellowship life. So what if we were to get curious instead about people's actual experiences? What is it like to be a theist and a Unitarian? What is it like to be an atheist and a Unitarian? And even more particular, what is your personal story? Tell me how you came to know through your own experiences that you did believe or did not believe. Tell me about your times of despair or your times of grief and how your way of being in the world helped you walk through that time. So what sorts of experiences are people talking about when they're using the language of spirituality. I think of André Comte Sponville's experience in the forest with his friends in the north of France. Somehow, something happened in that moment. It shifted something inside him. Perhaps it was triggered by the forest, perhaps by the vast starry sky overhead, or his sense of companionship with his friends. Something happened, and he felt connected to all that is in a new way. And even after the experience ended, it was still inside him, still there, having an impact on who he was and what he did. I think of the author Holly Bridges Elliott standing in her kitchen, watching her children eat peanut butter and jam sandwiches, when she stops in mid-bustle, as she puts it, and looks around. She says, "The entire room became luminous, and so alive with movement that everything seemed suspended, yet pulsating, just for an instant, like light waves. Intense joy swelled inside me, and my immediate response was gratitude. Gratitude for everything, even the tiny space of my kitchen. The shelter of the room became a warm embrace. Water flowing from the tap seemed a tremendous miracle. And my children became, for a moment, not my progeny or my charges or my tasks, but eternal beings of infinite singularity and complexity, whom I would one day, in an age to come, apprehend in their fullness." I think of my own experience of discovering the writing of Annie Dillard, how when I read the first line of the poem, it was like the air was crystal clear, and the words sliced like a knife through my consciousness, and I knew I had found a writer who would have deep, deep meaning for me. I also think of the sports psychologist who worked with my team when I was a teenager. He talked about flow and peak performance, and what was needed to attain and maintain that state. And I think of people I know with significant spiritual practices, prayer or yoga or meditation, who find that repeated practice helps them know themselves and live a happier life. These last two, of course, meditation and peak performance, are often studied scientifically. And we do know that it is possible to deliberately alter our brain activity, and that meditation and yoga and regular practices of this sort, they help with this. They shift things. This is one of the things that my colleague, Stephen Atkinson, talks about in his Confluence lecture. And if it interests you, I commend it to you. It's on the Canadian Unitarian Council's website. Before he became a minister, Stephen trained and practiced as a psychiatrist. So his ability to follow the literature around brain studies and surpasses mine. But what he has to say is that there is a definite shift. There is something that we can do that makes a difference in how we are perceiving reality. And the interesting thing is that we experience that shift differently. How we describe it, what we say about it, how we interpret it can be quite radically different from a similar person with the same state, the same shift. So this too is what spirituality is about. It's about opening ourselves up to the range of human experiences, understanding what they mean, understanding the ways that people have interpreted them through the centuries. I think of it as like reading a novel. There are many stories that I find fascinating. It doesn't mean that I want to be that person in the story or experience that situation, but by reading that novel, I have a deeper understanding of a different perspective on life. I get to see the world through another person's eyes. In short, I develop empathy. Novelist Barbara Kingsolver says, "Empathy is really the opposite of spiritual meanness. It's the capacity to understand that every war is both won and lost, and that someone else's pain is as meaningful as my own." I think we could say that empathy is an important Unitarian Universalist practice, maybe one of our most important practices. Empathy means not being so hasty to say that we understand one another. Empathy means not focusing all the time on what is similar. It's about getting curious about what's different. When we start to look at spiritual experiences, we discover that, like love, spirituality is a very broad heading. Comte Sponville's experience of feeling connected to the whole universe falls into a subcategory of experiences that take us outside ourselves and inside ourselves at the same time, so that we feel connected to everything. Bridges Elliott's experience in our kitchen is the type of experience that leads us to see the sacredness in everyday life, finding beauty and transcendence in the smallest of things. This is what Unitarian songwriter Peter Mayer is talking about when he sings, "Everything is holy now." Each type of experience has an impact on us. It shapes how we understand ourselves and our world. Recently, I was at an event put on by the Muslim community in Saskatoon, and one of the speakers mentioned, as an aside, that, of course, we're all wanting to gain paradise in the next life. That assumption was just so core to that person's being that they couldn't imagine another way of being. And those of us in the audience for whom it did not fit, we just smiled and understood. Some of us maybe were closer to that. Perhaps there's a connection with a Christian heaven. Perhaps there's a connection with those who have a view of the afterlife. But I'm sure there were those in the room who did not connect at all. I think as Unitarians, in order to hold this chalice of our congregations, I think as Unitarians we're called to become communicators, called to become translators, to be able to see and stand confidently in our own experiences, to know that we have worth and dignity, and the place that we've gotten to in our lives is important and valuable. And, therefore, the place that another person has gotten to is also a place of worth and dignity and value. And if we're going to want to be able to translate or help our society at large learn to live together in this mix of people we have, we need to develop some skills. Anybody who's tried even basic translating knows that there is not a direct word-to-word correspondence between each language. Each language has something unique to offer, and when I learn another language, I learn something about those people that I didn't learn from my own culture. And this is true of our ways of being theologically and spiritually and philosophically. Each of them is unique and valuable. If we were a garden of people, each plant, each species has something to offer the ecosystem. And when we celebrate diversity, when we say that everybody has something to offer, we're holding up a model of interdependence, a way of being in the world that ensures that everybody has worth and dignity, because we are going to go look for it and find it. One of our hymns this morning has the line, "Our spirits long to be made whole." For some of us, that is probably true. There is that longing. For others, probably not. But we sing it as we sing the variety of songs that we sing because it is true for someone. And it is an act of spiritual generosity to make sure that everybody knows that they are welcome. Our spirits long to be made whole. I find a resonance with the Third Humanist Manifesto, which was written in 2003. It says, "We aim for our fullest possible development and animate our lives with a deep sense of purpose, finding wonder and awe in the joys and beauties of human existence, its challenges and its tragedies, and even in the inevitability and finality of death." We animate our lives with a deep sense of purpose, finding wonder and awe in the joys and beauties of human existence. We are a people who celebrate what it means to be human. We welcome anyone who finds themselves in agreement with our principles and sources. We pay attention to those who have the quiet voices, because we can learn from them about what it means to be human. And that, my friends, is what I think we are about. May it be so. Blessed be. Amen.
Now, again, if there are reflections, I have the talking stick. Anyone?
Thank you, Karen. And I was going to say, because I'm going to do something on love on the 14th. And it is so true. Everybody has a story. And it's a humanist story. And the fact that I'm going to slightly shift the information I'm given with regard to their personal story and make my story, their story, and their story, my story, that's the beauty of it. And yeah, I would like to thank you, because that's what it is. That's the spiritual aspect of who we are. And unfortunately, you won't be around, but I wish you would be. But that's okay. Thank you again. That was beautiful. Thanks.